Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and we're coming to you not from sunny Pittsburgh, but from rather foggy San Francisco.
Yeah, our recording studio is on the road because we're in California right now and having just a wonderful time. And today we're going to bring you several of the top chefs from this neck of the woods who are just a fascinating breed.
It's fun meeting everybody, talking to everybody.
Yeah, they're all making their own way. They all know each other as well. And as you'll know when you listen to the interview with our first guest, there's a connection to the fact that we met Chef Michael Tusk and his wife from Quince Restaurant. Quite the best restaurant we've eaten at in San Francisco for a long time. And we had an absolutely wonderful time there on Saturday evening. So first of all, a long chat with Michael about his restaurant during the afternoon before we went back there. So you'll have all the background information, and I'm sure you're just going to want to go there. So let's listen to this wonderful young man, Michael Tusk of Quince.
3 years ago on the James Beard weekend in Manhattan, Peter and I, were at the Modern having lunch. And got to chatting, as we always do, with people all around the dining room. And we hit on a table with Chef Michael Tusk and his wife, Lindsay, who was nominated for a Beard Award that year. And we struck up a conversation, but it's taken us this long now to get back and try your restaurant. Hello, Michael, and here we are at Quince.
Thanks for having me. It was a nice lunch, and I remember fondly meeting you at the Modern.
Yeah, well, we were having a good time. We always try to have a good time.
As do I.
Oh. Now, Quince is a very popular restaurant, a very successful restaurant in San Francisco. But you're going on from here. You're actually opening another space.
The new space is in the historic Jackson Square neighborhood of San Francisco, and it'll be slightly a little bit larger than this. It'll encompass two restaurants in one building. One will be Quince itself, and the other one will be a smaller cafe called Catonia that'll be open for lunch and dinner.
And Catonia, you said, means Quince in Italian?
Exactly.
Yeah, I never knew that word. That's funny.
Yeah, I just felt like it was time to move on from we still may keep this location and do something a little bit different with it anew. I like the spot a lot, and my guests like to come here, and I feel like
it's very comfortable, this restaurant.
I think it's a unique, there's not a lot of restaurants in San Francisco that have like a history that a building such as this has, and that has had a couple interesting restaurants and throughout a 30-40 year period. And,
oh, really? I didn't know that.
You know, the neighborhood restaurants seem to be not as many of them as they used to be. So, you know, my guests feel comfortable here, and I feel comfortable. Just may felt like it was time to do something a little bit different.
Well, of course. Now, you were a transplant. You're a Jersey boy. Schooled at the CIA, worked around, including stints in France, right?
Correct.
And then you adopted California, and you've been here ever since, huh?
That is correct. I just, by the time I had graduated from high school, I always had my sights set on coming to California. And
why, the climate, the availability of produce, why?
You know, I don't really, as a kid, I was out here once and you know, went across the Golden Gate Bridge and was very enamored with it. And then as I grew more interested in cooking, I felt like this was a natural place for me to be at. And I think it's hard for cooks that, running a restaurant and becoming a chef and an owner of a restaurant, that it's a little bit easier to cook in California, and that once you come to California and you start to forage around for produce or mushrooms or that, and then you go back to a different area of the country, you're a little bit on the spoiled side.
And I would say.
So I had tried once to leave, and I wanted to open up a small inn with a kitchen garden, and so I went back east, and I scouted at different locations throughout the East Coast, and
including the Garden State. That I always laughed at that one.
That I actually have to say, part of that trip, I didn't go to the Garden State, but I was in New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine. And then I did some other Virginia I was at, that's more south, but Virginia and different areas that I thought could be, you know, a good location for that. But it wasn't meant to be, and I got offered a job coming back to of all places, California. So
yes. At that point. You've worked with some really interesting chefs and restaurateurs in California. Can you want to mention just a few?
Sure. Well, when I first moved out here, my first job that I took out here was at the restaurant that's not around any longer, but it was Stars, and that was in the kind of like in its heyday, but before the earthquake that occurred here, that kind of like altered business for some restaurants in San Francisco. So that was my first job that I was, you know, right after I'd left the Culinary Institute of America. So I was there, and then I had a little bit of a kitchen accident, which I had an injury and tore up my knee, and then there was had a little rehabilitation, and then a job opened up at Chez Panisse, and then I'd always wanted to work there, and I remembered reading, you know, that first book, that the Chez Panisse menu book that came out. And then, so I was always enamored with that, with the seasonality aspect of being in California. And then once you get to a restaurant such as that, that was like a real delight to work at, because you're around inspired individuals that are really into, you know, not only teaching you about the seasonality of and working with small farmers and the restaurant farmer connection.
Yeah, you're really into ingredients. I mean, this is like the core of your cuisine is ingredient driven, right?
Well, definitely started there. It was like, you know, on the Wednesdays they'd have the Chino Ranch boxes that would come in on that would be picked up at the airport, and then I think I got hooked and cooking in that kind of style from opening up the boxes. And my chef at that time was Peggy Smith, who now owns the Cowgirl Creamery. So she would have me
fabulous,
you know,
cheese place.
Yeah, she was a great chef and great great cheese maker, and I'm really proud to have been able to work for her and seen the success that she's had since.
Well, you're dedicated to this ingredient thing. You said you were not one but three farmers markets this morning.
Today I got to the San Francisco Farmers Market at about 7:30, and did a small pickup there of some you know, cherries that were hitting on the marketplace. It's with global warming, everything seems to pop up in the market at a much earlier rate each and every year. So I got some. There were some peaches and apriums around that I passed on last week, but I tasted again this week, and I got some white peaches and some apriums and some cherries from another farmer.
It's not working that way in southwestern Pennsylvania this year, I can assure you.
No, but there's plenty of other delicious things in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. No, so. I meant it, the global warming isn't working to our advantage this year. Now, when do you move to the new place?
That I'd say in about 12 weeks.
Okay, will you let us know so that we can post an announcement so people will be able to find you?
Of course, I'll invite you to the opening also.
Oh, yeah. Well,
so maybe get you out to California again.
Now, do you have a website as well?
I do. It's quincerestaurant.com.
Okay, and so you'll incorporate your new restaurants into this as well?
Exactly.
Okay. Let's talk food.
Love to.
Yeah. Give us some idea. I know you like to have spontaneity into your menus when you have guests, and so I don't want to curb your spontaneity, but could you give us some ideas of just, because people like to hear what the dishes sound like?
Sure, I'd love to. Well, to give you an example, since you're coming back for dinner later, I know I just got a phone call a little while ago, and then there's the first burst of some spring porcinis that are around, so I'm waiting for them to arrive. They haven't arrived yet, but most likely you'll have something with porcinis. I got a little bit of squash blossoms at the market today.
Wonderful.
I think you'll definitely try something with the cherries that I got. Maybe something with the white peaches in a different way than you might have expected. But I pretty much what my basic thinking is, I just try to on that given day if you're going to come in and just say, you know, have us cook for you. I'll just try to kind of determine what I feel is like the most exciting ingredients that day, whether it's produce, fish, whatever.
How about
really
soft shell crabs?
There's some soft shell crabs that season's underway, so we can pull that off also. But basically, I'll work around that, and then I'll kind of formulate the menu from really what I'd like to what I feel is like the real cream of the crop of the ingredients, and then I'll determine the preparations. And some of them I'll take from the menu that we have. It's more of like a menu that's set for the, you know, 3-4 days, and I tinker. There's 6 courses in each section. And then as I feel fit, I'll take something off. I'll add something in, and then I'll if it's not really working the way I want to, I'll remove it from the menu. And if it's something that that I really like, for example, last night I did a dish with I got some veal sweetbreads from Sylvie at Forestry Hill Farm in Pennsylvania.
Oh, you're on her favorite list. You're lucky.
I'm really addicted to like, I think she's a really special farmer. And,
but, you know, she doesn't just sell for anything.
It's Forestry Farms.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the one thing when I go to, like, visit a place like New York, and I see, you know, them delivering to the different restaurants, and I kind of dream about being able to get that much of her products. But, you know, with the shipping, it's a little bit tough for us out here in California for small restaurant.
And
but
you're supposed to do local. Peter was the same.
I think I saw some rabbit on the menu.
That's from this state. That is a local. I use 2 local rabbit sources. One is in Nicasio, one's in Santa Rosa, and that's the Jones Ranch rabbit tonight. And there's also the Devil's Gulch rabbit that's from Nicasio. So I kind of flip flop between the two of them. So that that could appear at your dinner table this evening.
And
also,
you're playing with a little crudo too.
We've got a crudo tonight of. I'm a big fan of sea urchin, so there's a sea urchin.
I love sea urchin. Yeah,
so do I. I think you might actually see sea urchin in two yeah. preparations if it's.
Jean George always has a great sea urchin.
I love that dish with the.
What is that?
I think it's the black. It's a little sea urchin, a little sea salt, and I think it's either jalapeno and maybe yuzu.
Dish,
it's really good.
It probably is yuzu.
So, no, that's delicious. I think tonight we may have a pasta for you with sea urchin, and maybe the crudo has local halibut, scallops, a little Sicilian olive oil and sea salt, and local halibut from here that we just get.
I can tell your mind is constantly turning when you see the ingredients about what you're going to do with them. You've sort of oriented yourself to this market here. What's happening in it? I mean, how's it all coming down with the economy and so forth? I mean, give us a little brief overview of the San Francisco dining scene. You're so integrated into everything going on.
I'd say, you know, just like any other place, I was in New York 2 weeks ago. I had to go for a brief 2-day trip. You know, a lot of restaurants are. You know, a lot of the busy restaurants, I think, are still busy, but it's just a different time period for everybody. A lot of the chefs that I speak to in New York, they're down a fairly significant amount from the year before. Everybody's it's a business of making adjustments, and I think everybody's making the necessary adjustments to stay in business. For us, it's you know, I'm doing the same. We're luckily still busy, but you know, we're trying to.
But what about food trends? Do you see anything food happening?
Trends,
in
food? You know, San Francisco has always been a city that likes you know, the late 80s it was called you know, grazing and eating a lot of small plates. You see the return of that this past couple of years. There's been a lot of more advent of restaurants that serve pizza. That's big in San Francisco these days. A little bit more, you know, molecular kind of scene than there was.
Oh, you see that too?
In some restaurants, you know, you see a pretty good amount of it. I think a lot of the chefs in San Francisco have kind of changed a little bit within the last kind of couple of years. You see basically, I think you see a lot of information that kind of comes from Europe. It goes to New York first, and then it makes it out to California, and then. But it's changing. I think things are adapted a lot faster in California than they were in the past. Whereas in the past, I think people thought, you know, just like ingredients. Where I think there's ingredients with excellent technique these days, and there's a good balance between the two of them.
We've had several interviews recently with couples who work together, and we haven't talked about very much about your wonderful partner Lindsay, who we met when we met you for the first time. And I'm thinking of David and Karen Waltuck and Chanterelle. We talked to them recently, and they've passed 30 years together.
That's pretty
in the same business, and there must be a secret there. There's something about the team of the two of you that really makes Quinn special.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I actually had to mention that as growing up on the East Coast, I did get to go to Chanterelle when it was in those first years, and luckily the family brought me once or twice. I had a really nice meal that I still remember from there. So yeah, no, it's a very hard to work that many years together. Luckily, we both support each other, and she's great in the front with guests, and is very she just sees a lot, and she's very smart, and is able to the guests these are people that have become friends with you after people that come and fought a couple of days a week for a number of years, that it's nice to look out in the dining room, and they know that they're being taken care of, and they know that they're going to see usually both of us or one of the two of us every time they come to the restaurant. So there's a feeling of it's more like you're in somebody's house than just a restaurant where the next week that you go there, you're never going to see the owner.
And I think it's also probably good for the relationship that one is not sitting at home while the other is working these crazy hours.
Now it's right now with the other project, she's concentrating a little bit more on the new space, and I'm here, and then we float back and forth, and then it's an interesting time.
Well, Michael, you're very interesting to talk to, and I really look forward to coming back and trying some of these. You'll probably change. I mean, you're so inventive. You'll change what you're planning by the time we get back here.
That's a great thing about having a restaurant this size, is that I don't feel like I'm under pressure that I can't change something. And then if it's really a dish that I feel is excellent, then I'll keep it the same. And if the guests want it, the next week and it's still in season, then I'll serve it to them. And that's the biggest indicator for me what I should keep or take off the menu is the guests, because they're the most important factor in the restaurant, keeping them happy. So I really like to, but I do like being able to, the element of surprise if I'm in a restaurant in Italy or France or anywhere for that matter. I don't really need to look at a menu. I don't, even if I, when I was younger and I couldn't really read great Italian or French, I would still order something, and I like the idea of something arriving at the table and not knowing, exactly what I'm going to get. And that element of surprise, I think, is something that is really exciting about having a meal and a flavor that you might not have tasted before, or a combination that you didn't really think was gonna work, or you didn't even know that they would remotely like put it together, and then you eat it for the first time. So for me, that's exciting, and I think it's
well,
great.
For us too, I can't even wait. I'm getting all excited. So, but anyhow, we'll talk more afterwards. And thank you for taking the time for service. I don't understand how you can go from 7:30 in the morning until what time at night?
Oh, well, I'll be here until the end of the night, like, I don't know, midnight. I live down the block, so it's easier for me to walk home. It's nothing that I haven't done for the last number of years. I think most people in the restaurant business have a pretty good ability to work long hours. And if you didn't love what you were doing, then you wouldn't be able to do it. And I think you have to really love what you're doing in the restaurant business, or you're not going to be around for too long.
Well, as I said, we're getting excited about this, and you're a gem, and what a serendipitous meeting we had in New York 3 years ago, and I could hardly wait. Thank you.
I'm looking forward to cooking for you this evening and talking afterwards about anything you'd like to ask me.
Great. Thank you.
My pleasure.
And now let's take a break, but hang on for a more detailed review of this wonderful menu.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, here we are again. Remember, you can email us at any time, onthemenu@onthemenuradio.com, or tune into our blog spot, our blog, I guess. It's onthemenuradio.blogspot.com. And join me on Twitter, OTM Dish is my handle, I guess it's called, on Twitter. And also on Facebook, and any other way you want to do it here.
Let's go back to Quince, because unusually, right after dinner, we caught up with the chef right in the bowels of the kitchen, and he talked about everything he served us and the philosophy behind it. It's just a fascinating conversation.
And this is a no-miss for foodies.
Well, I mean, I actually do not even know what to say, because we just had the most splendid tasting menu. We are going to talk about whether you can have the same thing. And Peter said, and he asked Michael Tusk if, in fact, this was a possibility. And he said, if you really are interested in food, and if you really ask, he can do the same kind of wonderful thing he did for us, which was like looking at what was wonderful for the day, figure out what was wonderful he could do with it, and he did it. And, I mean, I'm just so happy. Michael, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. No, I love to cook that in that fashion, where there's a sense of immediacy, and I'm able to, you know, we have the printed tasting menu, and then this for me is...
to me looked good enough, but then you sent things out. I really am going to ask you to run through, I mean, I loved some of the stuff. First of all, I was in love with your fava bean preparation, but I don't want to get ahead of you. Talk to us about what exactly we got. Course one, course two, course three.
Sure. Well, we started you off with a local grass shrimp. They're very small.
Oh, yeah,
shrimp from the bay. And
they were fabulous.
You can eat the entire head. So I just basically made a little semolina flour breading with a little bit of espalette pepper that came from a small farm called Tierra Farm in Windsor, which is about an hour
you
north of
here. You mean they grow it here? I thought it came from France.
They did. They brought back this woman. If you go to the farmer's market on Saturday at the Ferry Plaza here in San Francisco, she's like a pepper fanatic and chilies and so forth. So she somehow brought back some espalette seeds and she grew some peppers, and she made a powder, an espalette pepper. And I basically was able to, she sells it at the market, and I made a little sauce with the espalette, and it was basically a flash fry for 45 seconds and a little pinch of salt, and that was a little crunchy.
What was the green thing in there? It was like a chai.
That came from a friend of mine who is also a local farmer. It was a little bit of a gretti. You see it in dishes throughout.
A gretti? That's, I'm telling you, I don't know what it is.
Really. It looks like a almost like chive-ish, but it's got a little bit more bulk to it, and it's got I just basically snipped the agretti and threw that in, lightly dredged it.
Yeah, I tried to order agretti to grow, and they said they were out of the plants.
This woman grows, her name's Annabelle Lenderink, and she grows the agretti for me, and she also grows some streetily and a lot of really interesting heirloom beans, and it's right across the Golden Gate Bridge here in Bolinas.
I don't know what streetily is, but we're going to move on to the second course.
The second course was the fava beans that you were talking about, and those were a couple of years ago. I started buying these favas from this particular farmer in Santa Cruz, and they only have a couple crops, and because of the coastal the weather patterns out that way, I feel like their fava beans are super moist, and that's why I served them to you raw. I basically, right before you came, I cleaned them and just tossed them with a tiny pinch of olive oil, a little bit of that fino verde basil that I got at the market. There was a little bit of calendula flowers on the one side of the plate, and then we made a a vegetable stock, and then we made a chilled soup on the other side of the plate that had a little bit of Maine lobster. The name of the farm was Freewheeling Farm. They don't use any mechanized equipment on the farm. And so I get like almost 100 pounds or so of their 150 pounds of their favas every like 3 or 4 days. And last year I did a fava bean tasting menu of 8 fava bean courses, and I'll try to maybe next week I'll do that again.
Yeah, I'd love to be there. Oh, that sounds good.
Okay. And the squash blossom menu, I also do. I try to do that every, maybe in 2 weeks I'll start that off.
Squash blossoms.
So you had the two fava bean preparations. One was a chilled soup, one was a salad.
Yeah.
And then we moved on to a little, it was basically a river dog farm. I picked up this asparagus in the morning, jumbo asparagus. It's also a local farm in the Cape Valley, and boiled it. And it was served with a fried egg yolk from their farm.
I've never even known this was a poached egg or a soft-boiled egg or a soft-boiled egg. You took the yolk out and then you deep-fried it?
Exactly. We just separated the yolk from the white. Then, just like you were poaching an egg, we just poached the yolk for a very, very short period that we can handle it. Then we floured it, put a little bit more egg on it so that the breadcrumbs would adhere to it. And then we deep fried it for 45 seconds. We tossed the asparagus in a brown butter, a little bit of shards of Parmigiano Reggiano, and a little bit of house cured pancetta. It was a little takeoff on it.
Is this something that other people do, or is this a wave of genius in your heart?
No, it was basically an asparagus a la Fiorentina, like an asparagus with...
What made you think of doing this with the yolk?
You know, I just kind of read a lot, and I'm always like trying to come up with like new preparations. And I remembered a bunch of years ago, I was in Bassano del Grappa, and they're famous for their white asparagus. And I had purchased a book on white asparagus cookery, and I saw something similar, a similar dish, but that had the fried yolk. And I started doing it like 4 or 5 years ago, and every asparagus, green asparagus season, I try to break it out. Sometimes I'll do a pasta with something super simple, with like a tagliolini with butter, and I'll put the fried yolk in the center too, and let the customer break into the yolk.
Loved it.
Bought.
Okay,
I appreciate
we moved
it.
On, and now what?
Then we took some...
I might prepare our listeners, so we went through many courses. How many were there?
You had about 11, I think.
Oh, okay.
Let's keep on going.
So,
we have to go to bed.
You moved on to a really simple preparation of... we could have done this with local halibut from our local waters here, but this was it was the Alaskan halibut. We just steamed it for a very short period of time, and it was wrapped in a squash blossom.
Yeah,
it just came with a little bit of the first of the season zucchini, a little bit more pinch of basil, and it was a very simple preparation, but I liked it a lot.
Oh, all this is simple, listeners, but also
and I put
it was
a tiny,
just perfect.
Tiny pinch of Churchill Farm in Ojai. It's one of my more favorite farms that had a little Ojai pixie tangerine on there too, just for a little tiny pinch of acid. So
yeah, I tasted that.
So then we moved on to when we were speaking this afternoon, the truck pulled up with the mushroom forager, and that was our first porcinis that they had called about, and they were kind of pricey, but I got like 3 pounds, and I said I wanted to do one thing porcini. You had two little porcini preparations, but I made a little cartoccio or papillote and porcini, and it had a tiny pinch of nepotella, and it also had the fiddlehead ferns in there, since we were also chatting about the ferns. So a little vegetable stock, and I baked that in the oven while we were roasting the scallops, and then Katrina was nice enough to the general manager to spoon over or let you eat the cartoccio whatever way you wanted to, but with the seared scallop. So that was our first porcini preparation. Then we moved on to the Senatore Capelli from Latini and the Marche, which we were talking of also.
Yeah.
It's a single wheat varietal spaghetti, and I had a spaghetti, I think the first time.
Yeah.
That this, this I had at, if you ever go to Imo e Nadia in Milan, they do a really great spaghetti dish that's just basically a little bit of tomato, olive oil, and basil, but it's one of the most magnificent dishes that I've ever, and I still remember it from like 10 or 12 years ago.
Yeah, when we visited Latini.
That's great. So I like that particular dried pasta, and that's
more, I do too.
So when I put dried pasta on, I usually
The one I really like is the
Rusticella.
Rusticella is my favorite.
That's good too.
Pasta. Yeah.
So
you had that too?
Oh, yeah. So yeah, I try them all. I try to.
Moving on.
We had, that spaghetti was served with a little hot pepper, green garlic, sea urchin, and periwinkles sauce.
Oh, I forgot. The sea urchin was fabulous.
So you told me you were a big fan of sea urchin.
I am.
So that was with the spaghetti, and then we moved on to a little potato gnocchi that had a little bit more zucchini and a blossom sauce with it was a dish where we fry up a lot of green zucchini and salt it, fry it up. I make a little vegetable stock, put the fried zucchini into the stock, add a little bit of Parmigiano Reggiano in the pan, a little bit of olive oil, and then we bind it together on the pickup. In this preparation, we also served it with a little bit of the squash blossom fritti that we had as a little garnish. So that was a nice little creamy sauce. And after that, we had a little garganelli with a local duck ragu with a pinch more. Those were supposed to be a little English peas in there, but instead, I like the fava so much that I threw a little bit more fava into. So, and then being that you came, we were nice enough to come from Pennsylvania. I had to have you have a little have the Four Story Hill Farm. You know, the veal heartbreads are. And that was just basically
sweetbreads.
Correct.
Yeah.
So basically pan roasted, and they were served with a little puree of the first of the season bhinji potatoes. And then we had a little ragu of the garlic scapes and bulbing garlic. And I also garnished that with while the sweetbreads were being roasted, we threw another piece of porcini in there. So you had porcini and a second preparation. And our final dish of the night, savory-wise, was the roasted or smoked Payne Farm squab from Sonoma.
Oh, God, I love the squab.
He's an Australian gentleman. I think I've been buying squab from him for about, like, 15 years in a row, and he's probably one of my more favorite farmers. Great guy. Just raised a squab, and that was smoked, and it had a little bit of cherry wood in the smoke, and then we served it with some first of the season cherries, and it was a little giblet sauce with the leg and a little bit of farro and something else that I can't remember. So,
well, I mean, you've gone through this list, and I mean, I think that probably by now the listeners understand everything that you do is special. You think through, you want the flavor, you seek the best you could do, and we just had a fabulous meal.
Oh, I had a fabulous time hosting you here. It was lovely of you to come.
Well, hopefully we're coming back for the next season, so get yourself ready.
I will be ready for you. As well, the rest
Michael,
of the staff.
Thank you so much.
It was my pleasure.
Well, while you digest all of that, it's time for us to take another break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Here we are again, still in San Francisco, and we're going to be looking at and talking to another, in fact, a very important rising star chef. Let's listen to our information interview and meal at SPQR. Here we are at SPQR talking to Nate Appelman, who is the latest James Beard awardee for Rising Star Chef. He has two restaurants in San Francisco. One is A16, which just closed, unfortunately, for renovations. So we're missing out on that, although we have the cookbook, which we interviewed him about before, if you recall. And his other restaurant, SPQR, is in what district is it, Nate?
This is the Fillmore or Pacific Heights area.
Okay. We had an absolutely wonderful meal here. How is this menu different from A16? Which is your better known restaurant, right?
SPQR is completely different than A16. A16 focuses on southern Italy, especially Campania and wood-fired cuisine, where SPQR is our take on a Roman osteria that, you know, we just do a lot of fun food. You know, it's not necessarily food that is typically found in Rome, although we do have a great mix of truly Roman dishes, but it's also just a lot of fun dishes that I've been inspired to cook, you know, from my trips to Rome.
Yeah, I mean, because I guess your special feature, you feature a special region of Italy, and it was Alto Adige? attitude today?
Yeah, every month here at SBQR we do we feature a different region around Italy, and we do wine and a few dishes from that region.
So I mean, we didn't have all things from that region, but we had some, I guess. But just go through some of the wonderful dishes we had, so that listeners could get an idea of what kinds of fun you're going to have here.
Well, today you had a good mix of dishes. You had the tuna conserva, which is a house preserved tuna, chickpeas and radishes and fennel and celery, and a little bit of dried tuna on top. You had a nice chicory salad, you know, very fresh chicories from local farmers.
Oh, they were very good. Very fresh.
With just a light anchovy, almost like an anchovy cream. Dressing.
Was there cream in that?
Yeah, just a touch of cream.
And then what about, I thought it was very unusual, the fried tripe.
Yeah, you know, here at SBQR, since we do focus on the region, or, you know, food from Rome, or food that I've been inspired from Rome, you find a lot of dishes like tripe, tongue, and heart, and, you know, it's what the Romans would call the quinto quarto, or the fifth quarter of the cow, or animal, which means everything left over from the other four quarters. And it's long been known as kind of the butcher's cuisine. It was food that the butchers would take home and prepare, and now it's become, you know, really indicative of Rome to have the quinto quarto cuisine.
It's also very fashionable anymore.
Very fashionable.
Yeah. So you can get it in restaurants like yours.
Yeah, it's a way of using the whole animal,
right.
Which, you know, it's one of my main goals.
And what about this pasta, which I said I was not going to eat, and it was addictive. What was that?
You had a spaghetti carbonara. You know, that is a very Roman dish. We make the pasta here. Now, in Rome, you would typically have that with a dry pasta. What we do is we make a fresh pasta with the same ingredients as you would a dry pasta. So it's just semolina and water. We dry it partially, but not all the way. And then we serve it with, you know, a very traditional sauce. It's guanciale, eggs, black pepper, and pecorino romano, and that's it.
Oh, it was so yums. And then we said, we cannot eat dessert, and you said, well, we have to try a little. And what did we have, which was yums?
You had the granita for dessert. Now, granita,
it's not like any granita I've ever had.
No, but granita you find all over Rome. Just in every gelato shop, they always have a section of granita. And I absolutely fell in love with granita. Every time I've traveled to Rome, it's just like one of my favorite things. And so my pastry chef and I have just come up with different flavors. This one was a cocoa nib and anise granita with a cocoa nib and anise cream. You know, pretty unique,
yes.
But, you know, those flavors are pretty Italian, pretty Roman, and so it's one of my favorite desserts.
Now, as we understand it, not only are you renovating and reopening A16, but you're also opening an A16 in Tokyo. That's rather amazing.
Yeah, you know, we partnered with a group in Tokyo that operates restaurants, and we're going to be opening an A16 in Tokyo in September.
And you said you had another concept for San Francisco as well?
Yeah, and then later in this year, hopefully November, if not the first of 2010, we're going to be opening a restaurant called Urbino, which focuses on the region of Le Marche, which is on the Adriatic side of Italy. And
Some of the best food in Italy. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're very low-keyed about the fallout, I guess you don't call it the fallout, but what's coming down the pike because of this recognition you received this year at James Beard?
You know, I'm not sure what's coming down the pipe for me. You know, I know that I haven't changed. I'm still the same guy cooking the same food. And I'm just lucky to be recognized by my peers for doing what I love to do.
You're so laid back. I mean,
this is California.
Now, this man was not laid back in New York. He was walking about 10 feet in the air, and if you didn't catch that on the menu program, you should go back and listen to 25 seconds of Nate Appleman hysterics while he describes what it was like to win the Kentucky Derby of Restaurant Awards.
I would like to hear that myself, because I don't remember anything. After I won, I just...
You don't remember
anything. I don't remember a thing.
Oh, you have to listen to it, because
yeah,
you were very effusive and poetic.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So, anyhow, anything else that we should all know about Nate Appelman?
I love food first and foremost, and everything comes second after that. And it's just, you know, I'm just happy I get to do what I love to do.
Yeah. Now, I mean, you're out of Ohio, but I guess you've really become a Left Coast person.
Yeah, you know, I was born in Ohio and raised in Ohio, but I'm California at heart.
Uh-huh. And you can't beat your access to product here.
No. In Northern California, we have the best product, I believe, in the world. Been all over the world. I've tried many different things. You know, people romanticize about produce and product in Italy and in Spain, but I'll be the first to tell you that what farmers are doing in America and what ranchers are, the animals that ranchers are raising, it's far superior. And we will be known as the food capital of the world in a very short time. I promise you that.
You mean California or the United States?
Well, California mainly, but I'll say United States just because my love of America.
Yeah, I mean, I think we already are, to be honest. Yeah. But anyhow, a website. Do you have a website?
Yeah, two websites, a16sf.com and spqrsf.com.
Yeah, you know, I can't remember what the actual Latin is for SPQR. What is it?
It's Senatus Populusque Romanus.
Meaning?
Which means the government and the people of Rome. It's on everything.
It's on everything. I remember. Yeah, but I can't remember my Latin well enough, probably. Well, Nate, we certainly enjoyed our lunch here and enjoyed talking to you. And you're only 29, so I think there's a lot more to come, and so keep us posted on what's happening.
I will keep you posted, and I guarantee there's a lot more to come.
I bet there is. Thanks, Nate.
All right. Thank you.
Now I think we'll take another break, won't we?
Well, I think we will.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. A slight change of scenery for our next interview, but there's a connection. First of all, it's not very far away. A wonderful new resort and restaurant in...
And it's going to be making big waves.
In Yountville, California, called Bar de Sono. And the intriguing thing about it, aside from the fact that Chef Sean O'Toole is a wonderful young man and a wonderful chef who cooked a great meal for us, turns out that there's a connection with Michael Tuskett Quince, because at a point in his career when Sean was in San Francisco, with time on his hands, he took the opportunity to help out. At that time, a friend, and still a friend, Michael Tusk, by helping to cook in his kitchen for about 6 weeks when Michael was trying to get his restaurant off the ground for the first time. They're still great friends, and you can see why, because there's, aside from the fact that they're both nice guys, there's a commonality in the fact that they both produce magnificent food, and we were delighted to have the opportunity to experience that.
On the Menu, of course, eats many a grand meal, but today was really exceptional. We just loved it. And we're going to be talking to the person responsible for that, and that's Executive Chef Sean O'Toole. Hi, and welcome to On the Menu, Sean.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Now, your name is, we better say where you are first.
We're actually at the Bar de Sono in Yountville, California, Napa Valley.
Which is new property.
Yes, brand new, opened in February, opened 3 months, young hotel.
Right, and it's very special in many ways. Could you just give us a brief explanation of how it's LEED certified and all that wonderful stuff? I told you I was going to come and take a shower. Tell us about that.
Well, we're in the process of being LEED certified, hopefully to be the first platinum hotel upon opening. It's a lot of reclaimed wood, reclaimed tufa stone from the original property that was here. This is a former vineyard right in Yountville. It's just an incredible space. There's 62 rooms spread out over 6 acres. We have an on-site garden where we actually harvest daily vegetables and herbs. Feel really gifted for that. The shower is an interesting thing because some of the rooms here actually have outdoor showers.
That's what I was talking about, that I wanted to have. We saw it when we did the tour of the property. I thought, wouldn't that be wonderful, having an outdoor shower today?
Yeah, it's extremely interesting. We actually have two rooms, too, where I don't know if they showed you, but they have outdoor tubs also.
Oh, no, they didn't tell me about that.
Yeah, very, very, very interesting property. Extremely dynamic, extremely beautiful. and just great addition to the community here in Yountville.
Very smart, very contemporary. And your cooking, let's talk about that. I mean, first of all, we're really fortunate to have you at this dining establishment. I mean, you run what, one wet restaurant or?
What we do here is we have I run the whole food and beverage program.
That's big.
That would consist of the restaurant, which is 68 seats plus 32 patio seats outside,
which is delightful. That's where we ate.
Yeah, and especially on a beautiful day like this with the breeze, it's just perfect. We have two private dining rooms here where we can seat 14, and an outdoor private dining room which can sit up to 18. So it's a pretty special dining experience. We also have a lounge with a separate menu that has its own identity, which has 24 seats and then another 18 seats outside.
And you do all the bar menu and everything.
Everything. Yeah, banquet menu.
You've got a lot of energy, I must say.
Yeah, I have a very big plate is what I like to say. I just need to fill it with food.
Well, you wouldn't have much trouble doing that. I mean, you've got so much talent and so much style to your cooking. How would you describe your style?
This is probably the toughest question I ever
have to answer.
I know,
I hate asking that.
But it's a question that needs
people
to be answered.
People want to know what to expect when they get here, besides delicious, which I can assure everybody that it certainly was for lunch.
You know, I like to think of it as if we label it new American, because that gives us the opportunity to take the products that we have that day and place it into any style or any cuisine. We don't have a cuisine per se. It gives us the ability to cook in any cuisine, in any style, at any point in time, depending on the product.
Well, that's where it is right now, anyhow. I would mention that when we came by to tour the property the other day, you were not here because you were foraging for morels. How many pounds did you get?
I did not weigh them, but I think I got about 15 to 20 pounds.
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
You might be able to convey to our listeners the kind of food to expect by just running through this wonderful four-course luncheon you prepared for us. Describe some of these dishes.
Well, you know, I think that we're not set just to do one style of food that, like we spoke about. So we started today with a Maine lobster salad with crunchy spring vegetables. So a nice little mix of some diced cucumbers, some diced celery, some diced daikon radish, diced flambeau or French breakfast radish, with a little bit of lemon, chopped chives, and olive oil, and a little bit of chopped lobster meat. Then we set half of a Maine lobster on top of that and dress it with some nice olive oil, lemon zest. And then we do garnish that with a little bit of fresh green almond, just because it's that time of the year, and they are perfect. And then what we refer to as a coconut lobster gazpacho. So coconut milk, a lobster-based chilled soup with some nice lemongrass and ginger and a little bit of basil and chili in it to give it a little lift.
And listeners, everything is balanced. There's nothing that screams at you. It's just it's pure flavor, just gorgeous.
Very kind, thank you.
Yeah, and then we moved on to...
The next course would be potato gnocchi. There's a farm in Petaluma called Little Farms, and they do these dry farm potatoes, so we get their russet potatoes. We make gnocchi out of that, basic, light, nice, light gnocchi.
What do you mean dry?
Dry farmed, as in, this I can't define dry farmed, but I guess they wet farm and they dry farm potatoes.
I never knew that.
Yeah, and these are a dry farm potato from out on Tamales Road.
Yeah, I know Tamales.
On the way to Bodega Bay, I guess, in Petaluma. And we make these potato gnocchi, and today we did them with some Mendocino morel mushrooms because my guests had insisted that they have morels, which I didn't have a problem with since I love them. And then these really interesting little, they're called garlic lilies, and they actually, they come from a friend of mine's front yard in Healdsburg.
See, I was wondering if I had any of those in my yard.
You know, you might, and it's really, really interesting and really different, and the season is already over.
All right.
Yeah, but just really different and interesting.
Well, you know, the gnocchi were so light, I expected them to sort of fly off out of my bowl. They were so wonderful. And then what we had?
And then we finished it off with some Alaskan halibut, which we braise in a sauce that we make with the bones of the fish, a little bit of chicken essence, and nice lemon and a little bit of chili. And we served that today with a wild watercress puree, some Michigan ramps, and some New England fiddlehead ferns.
Oh, those ferns. The fiddleheads were great. They were crisp, perfectly done. Peter.
Well, I thought that we might ask to talk to us about some of the things we missed. Sean, the couple of dishes that are specials off the dinner menu that we didn't have a chance to have.
You know,
See, he's greedy. He wants even more.
I just want to hear about it.
You know, this is another tough question. This is the same as the style question or the cuisine question, because as a chef, I take pride in everything we do. So somebody will say, you know, what do you recommend? And I tell them I'm extremely biased, so I recommend everything. I think some of the highlights would be we do a really interesting shellfish a la grec. So we cook some local Monterey shellfish, some Appalachia Cove octopus from Florida, and do this wonderful chilled salad with local vegetables, fava beans from our garden here, jumbo asparagus from Stockton, beautiful artichokes, icicle and flambeau radishes from our garden also. And just really, really simple, dressed in a very light artichoke vinaigrette and finished with some beautiful Silvetta wild arugula.
Of course, I mean, you're sitting right in the heart of the best produce going in this country, probably.
Yeah, you know, and we can start to make the argument in the world, which is maybe a little pompous on our part, but, you know, being traveling previously and working in France, where you were always so amazed by the produce that was brought to you, I think this area of this country is at the same level as any of those areas.
Now, your name makes you sound Irish, except you really have a big percentage of French-Canadian in there. Plus, you've had experiences. You cooked in Las Vegas. You cooked in San Francisco. You cooked where else?
I spent a couple years in New York, Café Balut and Tabla.
Oh, were you a Tabla? Oh,
yeah. And
our great buddies.
Yeah, and, you know, I think I position myself to learn a couple different styles and understand a couple of chefs' philosophies on food. And I think I bring a little bit of all those chefs to the table.
Now, how hard is it to get into this place?
Into this restaurant to eat?
Well, let's start with, yes, the restaurant.
Well, I'm going to give you my personal phone number over the air, and then you can just call. Actually, you know, we're open breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We also serve the full restaurant menu in the lounge. It's any given day you could walk in here. And that's what we are. We're part of the community. We have a communal table here that seats 14 people. And when we are busy, we don't take a reservation for this table. And we let people come and walk in. And that way they can sit at a table with a group of people they don't know and enjoy themselves and enjoy the experience.
It seems to me you found a really nice niche here.
Yeah, it's a special place.
And the website, or how about the hotel? I mean, all that's on your website, which is what?
www.bardesono.com.
Can you spell that? Yeah.
Yes. BARDESSONO.
Great. And you have a wonderful wine program as well.
Yeah, it's really neat. It's a very it's a small program. There's a little over 200 labels on the list. Big focus on local Napa Valley, focus on organic, focus on biodynamic, and we have a very good selection of old world wine also. And for such a small list, it's there's so many different options.
Now, there's a little secret in the middle of this one, too. It turns out, Sean, admit, who's in charge of the wine program?
My wife actually manages that at this point in time.
And so we should say that we know that the wine list is only going to get better.
Yes.
As a result of Mrs. O'Toole's opportunity to have influence on the program. This is a great place. What we didn't do going back to the very beginning was to say the Bardesonos are real people. They own the land. They have a partnership with the people who developed the hotel, and they're building a house in back, and they come in almost every day to look at the jewel they've created. So this is a great place to come. We can hardly wait for the trees to grow. Right now, there are trees facing the street in little white plastic pots, and when they go away, this is going to blend so much in the community. It's just going to be delightful from the outside, as delightful as it is from the inside.
Yeah, every place you look, there's art as well. I mean, I'd like to mention that. I'm looking at a fabulous chandelier. There's an abstract mural. Are those grapes?
Those are olives.
Olives. Actually. I thought they were going to be olives. Yeah, I don't know why I said grapes, because they're obviously olives. But and you have sculpture all over the place.
Yeah, once again, the property is just so dynamic. But I think what really sets it apart is the true natural beauty of it. There's so much reclaimed wood here, and there's a sawyer from Marin County named Evan Shively, who's a former cook who milled all this wood. For example, the table we're sitting at right now is reclaimed Claro Orchard walnut wood.
Wow.
There's a single table in the center of the dining room, which is it's one single piece of Monterey cypress.
Oh, we noticed that one.
And it's about 20 feet long by about 4 feet wide.
Yeah, my husband liked that one. I don't think we can carry that out.
Yeah, it's incredible. And it just reflects the philosophy of the property itself, where and what we try and do also in the food and fall in line of the philosophy that, you know, to have things sustainable, to have them organic. And back to that, it doesn't have to be local to be sustainable. You know, if somebody's doing something right, be it, you know, of raising cattle or raising lambs or hook and line fishing or just doing things properly, they need to be rewarded and known. And that's what we try and do.
And listeners, you will be rewarded by coming here. In fact, I can't imagine any other place you'd want to stay, and I can't even wait till my next meal here. Sean, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you for having me, and we can't wait to have you back.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Eat your heart out, listeners. It was a wonderful experience, and we promise more to come in upcoming programs about California. But there's a point to insert here about this marvelous new resort hotel called Bardessono. So let me let Anne just say a word about that.
Oh, no, I mean, it's first of all, it's sleek, it's contemporary, it's green, which is really important. It's pampering. You can have indoor, outdoor showers, soak tubs. They have Japanese toilets that do incredible things, and they're all automatically. And it's state of the art in every way, as I said, including, I think it's, is it LEED LEED certified or seeking it?
It's going to be LEED certified.
But right.
It's extraordinary. The place is extraordinarily environmentally friendly, but at the same time, absolutely luxurious.
And lots of art.
And a place you should put on your map. And we intend to go back for more than just lunch, but to experience what it's like to stay there coming very soon. So we hope that you'll take the opportunity to do that yourselves. And in the meantime, it's all we have time for another week. So until
bye
next
bye.
Week.
Bye-bye.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.